Hi everyone, I'm Maggie McGrath, the editor of Forbes Women, and today we are joined by the president and CEO of Democracy Forward, Skye Perryman. She is also counsel on a number of different important abortion cases that the Supreme Court is considering this term. Skye, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I just rattled off a couple of different titles, but can you explain in 60 seconds exactly what you do? You lead Democracy Forward, but you are also providing legal counsel on a number of cases that could be shaping the future of reproductive health in America.
Democracy Forward is a legal organization. We represent people and communities across the United States in court cases that affect the way we live in this country and that affect our democracy overall. So I lead a staff of lawyers and policy experts and communicators, all doing that work for people and communities. Right now, with respect to abortion, we are representing the nation's medical organizations like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American Medical Association, on briefs, including yesterday at the U.S. Supreme Court in the Idaho case, where there is a question about access to emergency care for women who are pregnant who may need an abortion. So we're representing the medical community there. And then, of course, at the Supreme Court, we have also seen attacks on medication abortion, a medication known as mifepristone. And we are counsel to the generic manufacturer of mifepristone, Jim Biopro.
We'll get into the specifics of these cases in a quick second, but I want to start with a broad question. What does abortion have to do with democracy? Why is an organization and someone, a leader like yourself, getting involved on these reproductive health cases?
Well, look, we know that the vast majority of people in this country support access to reproductive health care. People are different. They all have different views. They may have different religious backgrounds or community backgrounds, but the vast majority of people do not believe that the government should be interfering in healthcare decisions that women have to make about their lives. And so this is a democracy issue because it is something that the vast majority of people believe in. They want to see protections for reproductive health care, and yet there is a movement that is seeking to roll those protections back, as we've seen with Dobbs, of course, being the most prevalent of that example of that movement. In addition, what we know is that there is a direct connection between the treatment of women and girls in a society and the overall strength of a democracy. And so it is not a coincidence that at the same time that we are seeing rise in attacks on voting rights, that we are seeing election denialism, that we are seeing these broader threats to our democracy overall that are being reported every day and are happening in communities every day, a rise in book bans in communities, that we are also seeing extreme attacks on women's healthcare access and rollbacks of the rights for women and girls in this country.
Now let's dive into the Idaho case that the Supreme Court looked at just yesterday. At issue is Idaho's near total abortion ban and a federal law that essentially, in very layman's terms, requires that hospitals treat patients in emergency scenarios and in a case of a pregnant person in a situation of emergency that could mean an emergency abortion. What is your impression after hearing those oral arguments yesterday? What is your top line takeaway that we should all know about what happened in court?
I was in the courtroom yesterday, and I can tell it was harrowing listening to the stories of women in 2024 being flown out of hospitals where they can't get care, hearing justices debate about how many organs a woman has to lose or how threatening a emergency situation has to be to allow a physician to do their job and to care for women. Those are the kinds of things that we heard yesterday. And so my takeaway is this is incredibly concerning and incredibly serious in terms of what it means for the rights of women, and in terms of what it means for our equal representation. As you just referenced, federal law has for decades protected women's access to go to an emergency room and get emergency care. It protects men's access as well. All people can go to an emergency room and get the care they need if they're in that emergent situation. And the fact that we may be in a situation where the court would contemplate and potentially decide that that federal protection does not extend to women who are pregnant who may need a termination is deeply concerning, and it's undemocratic.
What will happen, in your view, if the court rules in favor of Idaho in this case?
We know it will be devastating. We are already seeing a number of women that are not able to get the care they need. Stories about people having to have hysterectomies, having to have surgeries, their entire reproductive systems being in under threat, their lives and health being under threat because they're not able to get the care they need in these very tragic emergent situations. So that will continue, but it will also embolden this extremism further. And we will continue to see further and further attacks on healthcare and on women's access to healthcare. People that thought that Dobbs was the end, we have now seen that it was not the end and that there is no bottom to the extreme nature that these groups are gonna go to continue to deprive people of healthcare. And so I think this is a very high stakes case. And it is one where if the court were to decide in favor of Idaho, it would be devastating to the health and well-being of millions, but it will also be a threat to our overall democracy because the court would essentially be saying that a federal protection that applies to all people doesn't apply to people in a state like Idaho or in my home state, like Texas, where we've also seen women like Kate Cox and others be denied the care they need.
There have been a lot of abortion-related headlines over the last few weeks, and including the Mifepristone case, the Arizona 1864 law. It can get hard to sort through, I think, for regular consumers who might just see the headlines flashing by. What's your overall takeaway of the activity, the legal and legislative activity we're seeing around reproductive health at this juncture in 2024?
Well, first of all, we are seeing, again, as I started, that abortion is a democracy issue. The vast majority of people support it. And in states where citizens are able to put issues on ballots, in states where there are free and fair elections, we are seeing an increase in people voting for protections for reproductive health care. But we are also seeing concerning and emboldened attempts to restrict this access. And so that's a lot of the headlines you're seeing. Things that were a bit unimaginable maybe a few years ago have now become normalized. So an attempt to take a product like Mifepristone, which as you referenced is a product that is used, a medication that is used for early termination of pregnancy. It's used for a variety of other reproductive health care, but it's approved by FDA for the termination of pregnancy. Has a 2-decade safety and efficacy record, is incredibly safe, is incredibly commonly used. We're seeing extremists seek to go to court and have the court remove that product, remove the approval of the product, or roll back the way the product is regulated so that you can't access the product via telehealth. We're seeing people now threaten contraception access. We are seeing extremists have to resort to laws that were passed in the 1800s. You just referenced Arizona. We're also seeing this in broader ways with people referencing a federal Comstock Act, which is a law that should not even be applied or in effect, but that they're trying to go back to enforce. And so I think to break through those headlines, it's important to know that we're at a crisis point because notwithstanding that the vast majority of people support this healthcare and support the ability of people to access it, and notwithstanding the harms that we see when people are denied healthcare, there's nevertheless a movement afoot in certain states and in the courts to roll it back. And so that's really all the headlines you see could boil down to that. And it's why it's very important, and thank you for having me on. It's important to highlight these stories and these issues because this is something that we all need to be aware of and using the tools that we have to support women and girls.
Now, obviously, each Supreme Court case is different. Each state legislative decision is a little bit different in, you know, every scenario. You had the Alabama IVF that also happened.
Right.
But what I'm wondering is, as you let's focus on the Supreme Court, as you look at the arguments made and the questions asked in the Mifepristone case, and as you look at the arguments made and the questions asked in the Idaho case, what has that told you about that, about this court? And what does that tell you about what the state of abortion care will look like in a month or two when the court issues its decisions?
Right. So we don't know what the court's going to do. But we certainly have seen justices, including justices, for instance, that were behind the Dobbs decision, entertain questions that are very concerning, questions that come from an extremist perspective, that are not based on medical reality, that are not based on facts and evidence, and that are not based on the basic principles of women's health care. So we are seeing that, and it's highly concerning. What it means is that we can't take our reproductive health care access for granted. Dobbs showed us that, to the extent that there was any doubt. The Dobbs decision showed people that. But this says that this fight is going to go much further. And yesterday, to have to hear the Solicitor General of the United States, passionately and very competently defend a federal law that has been on the books since the 80s, that protects people who need emergency care. It's highly concerning. So I think, the fight is not going to be over. And regardless of what the Supreme Court does in these decisions, we are seeing such an influx, whether it is in state Supreme Courts, whether it is in other courts or in communities, we are seeing such an influx of attack. Nothing is going to be off limits. You've already seen the attacks on IVF. There are attacks on contraception. We have seen writings from Justice Thomas suggesting that he wants to reconsider contraception access altogether. And so I think that, what it tells us is this is an important issue that we all need to be paying attention to, and that we need to be using our lives and our tools that we have in order to bring about greater access.
When we think about the extremists on one side, the people who are bringing these cases to the court, you referenced everything's on the table, and there's something called Project 2025 that ties into all of this. What do our viewers need to know and understand about Project 2025?
Well, Project 2025 is an effort that I think around 70 organizations have joined, including organizations such as ones that have not supported women's reproductive health care access. It is bankrolled by the same moneyed interests that bankrolled the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And it is a plan that is being set forth and documented for how the federal government should operate, or how the extremists want to shape the federal government in a world where there is a presidency or a legislative session where there are people that do not support democracy. And so what we are seeing in that plan, which is about 900 pages, your viewers don't have to read it. You can go to democracyfor.org, and we have some resources to learn more about it. But where women's reproductive health care is concerned, we are seeing blatant attempts, really clear about the intent, to roll back reproductive health care access more, to enforce Victorian era laws that would criminalize medication abortion, that would seek to criminalize that would seek to criminalize this care. And so it's a very concerning.
You have said Project 2025 is very concerning. There is also a lot of chatter around something that you've referenced, which is the Comstock Act, which is another 1800s law. Can you very briefly explain what this is and why we should be paying attention to yet another 1800s law?
Well, the Comstock Act, of course, is a law from the 1800s, which, just to make this clear, your listeners and viewers know this, but that means that women did not have the right to vote when the law was passed. And it sought to ban and criminalize, quote unquote, obscene materials, which included a variety of things, including contraception and including, and so that's sort of what the Comstock Act did. Extremists have gone back into history and tried to resuscitate this law, which is not the Department of Justice. There's a number of authorities that have said, this is not a law that is valid, that should be enforced. But they've gone back in their history books, because that's where you have to go when you're an extremist like this, to find a Victorian era law to then suggest that in a future potential presidential administration, where perhaps the Department of Justice is controlled by interests that do not support women's reproductive health care, that this act should be enforced. And it's a criminal, it has criminal penalties. We have seen justices at the Supreme Court in the Mifepristone case reference this in ways that suggests that there is at least some justices on the court that were behind Dobbs that believe this act is something that they should look to. And we've seen extremist groups seek to refer to it and encourage enforcement. And so this is really just one example of a variety of examples of the high stakes for women's health at this time and for how extreme these interests are. This is not just language that we put out there and use the word extreme. This is quite literally in 2024, people having to go back to history books to find a time when women did not even have the right to vote, to seek to enforce some law to deprive them of reproductive health care and to criminalize people.
Earlier this week, we saw a poll that indicated that Americans support legal abortion at a level that we haven't seen before. It seems as if, with each passing month, public support for access to legal abortion just keeps increasing. What does that tell you about the elections in November, and how will this affect former President Trump in his showing at the polls?
Well, I think what it tells us, and again, we've known that there's strong public support, but you're right. As people are dealing with the devastation of Dobbs and the real life implications that are all the more stories that are all the more being told every day, we're seeing that public support rise. And I think it first of all tells us that it's no mistake that the same groups that are seeking to restrict abortion, ban abortion, criminalize doctors, criminalize women, are also the same groups that are seeking to undermine the ability of people to vote, to intimidate people, to try to keep people from participating in the political process by either acting like the process is rigged or by acting like there's no hope. Because what we know is that this extremist view is not something that the vast majority of people support. And so I think, first of all, what that tells us about what we're going to be dealing with over the next 200 days is a movement that does not want people to show up to vote and to use their voice. And we all are going to need to have a role in encouraging civic participation, I think, in those, you know, in light of those deep threats. I also think what it tells you, and we saw this right after Dobbs, where certain office holders started trying to waffle on their positions or to hide their positions. I think it also tells you that politicians know that this is important. And so it's going to be this is popular. And so it's going to be very important for your viewers and for all of us as Americans to get very specific about what we are demanding of our office holders, of people who want to hold the public trust and run for office, to understand their positions and to understand who is backing them, and to make sure that if you are someone that supports reproductive health care, which is the vast majority of people, that you know what positions folks are holding. Because I think that you're going to see a lot of attempts at misinformation, at disinformation. We even saw it yesterday at the Supreme Court, where in the wake of Justice Sotomayor just reading harrowing attempts, accounts of what has happened to women, some of the justices looking down at their papers, becoming a bit more silent, because this is a reality. And so we just need to be very vigilant and understand, and really understand what positions people have here. And of course, this Supreme Court was created by a far right legal movement that has backed a far right political movement. And it's important to remember that.
Skye Perryman, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.